Hope Fitzgerald is an internationally recognized spiritual teacher who pioneered the Infinity Wave, a powerful 10th dimension energy tool that empowers individuals to break free from limitations, expand their consciousness, and embody higher states of being. Today, Hope shares with us how the Infinity Wave can influence your life and bring in more joy, love, and compassion. She's an expert in the ancient art of dowsing to receive information, a midwife to the afterlife, and speaks on the power of water and how wise individuals connect regularly with the elemental power and wisdom of this essential resource, honoring its sacred role in sustaining life and promoting well-being. There is so much brilliance today, so tune in to hear more. We'll see you in the episode.
Are you obsessed with the mystic? Are you looking for sisterhood? Are you ready to explore your inner magic? You've arrived, sister. Welcome home. I'm Maureen Spielman, and I started this show to highlight the intuitives, healers, and other courageous women I have met along my journey. Through amazing interviews, we go deep into the mystics and uncover the ways in which you can apply the knowledge and wisdom in your own life. We are all in this together. Sharing healing and joy in community is both my passion and my purpose. Here's today's conversation.
Hope Fitzgerald, welcome to Mystical Sisterhood. I just told you I had seen you on Pam Gregory's YouTube channel about 6 months ago, and I visited your site, and it was the first I was learning of your work around the Infinity Wave, first and foremost, with many other offerings. And I just loved it so much. And then when you popped up on Podmatch, which is just something I joined a few weeks ago, I thought, like, oh, this is really synchronous. And so I wanted to welcome you here and just say, so happy to have you and to have what you're about to share.
Oh, thank you, Maureen. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad we got together here.
So am I. You know, as I was kind of doing my background, listening to the Infinity Wave, your book, and listening to a couple other podcasts, you know, one thing I was struck by was, you know, I will get into the modalities that you are, you know, you have made your life's work. But I loved how you said that you came from a long line of spiritual investigation. And I thought maybe if it makes sense to you that we could start there. And what do you mean by that?
Okay. So I just know that when I was nine, I asked my mother, I started reading the Bible of my own accord. Nobody in my family did that. And then I asked my mother to take me to all the religious houses in our town. I remember going into these different churches, synagogue, different, you know, perspectives. And I was clearly seeking, I was trying to find something that felt like a home. It was like a burning desire. And I didn't come away with any answers after those explorations. So my mother was the gatekeeper, opener, whatever, window opener for me. And God bless her for doing it. You know, she had to, you know, change her Sunday schedule and do all that to accommodate me. And it was really, really lovely. Many years later, she also was the instigator in me going into a completely different realm. And that was, she insisted when I was a junior in high school that I learn how to do transcendental meditation.
Wow.
And we came from a very Ozzie and Harriet type of background, you know.
Wow. Yeah.
The thing is just, and a little town, like everything, walk to school, you know, everything.
Right.
And here she is like, you need to learn how to meditate. I just learned how to meditate. You need to learn how to meditate. And she was right. Of course, I resisted it. I was, you know, 17, but I found it to be amazing. And I noticed that it gave me more than one or two gears in my emotional range. And so I kept it up. And then, well, my parents had separated at that time, and my mother took a deep dive in all these spiritual things and ended up having teachers come and teach at our house. And so I would come home from college and there would be, you know, spray painted minivans in our driveway, right, which was not exactly what the neighborhood was about. And this is in, you know, in the 70s. And I learned how to hands-on heal. I learned reflexology. I learned about past life regression. And these are days when didn't talk about
Yes.
anything. You were in the back closet, not even the front closet. You know, you were.
Yeah, and I'm thinking back then, now we can just open up our computer and have access to it all. What was your mom doing? Was it truly a word of mouth and that would travel across the miles as to who
Yes.
her next person would be?
Yes, but she was a very outgoing person, willing student, first degrees of Aries, you know, just like gobbling up all what's new and exciting, you know. And as a result of her explorations, I found out about this place called Findhorn in northern Scotland, which is, I believe there is still a place called Findhorn, a community, but it's not the way it was then. At that time, it was thriving. There were over 200 people who were members of the community living on campus. They had two campuses, and it all sprang from the work, the lives of this couple, Peter and Eileen Caddy. Their story is amazing, and I highly recommend anybody who's interested in magic, plants, the etheric kingdoms of nature. If you're interested in any aspect of that, read The Findhorn Garden.
Oh, I love it.
It will blow your mind as it did mine. And I said, I have to go there. And I did. At 21, I was at Findhorn. And if anybody has ever seen the iconic movie, My Dinner with Andre, there is a scene towards the end of the film where Andre Gregory is talking about, the whole movie he's been talking about these incredible adventures he's been going on, these spiritual adventures. He's talking to a hard-boiled New Yorker. And they indeed are friends in real life, Wally and Andre Gregory. Anyway, I'm watching this movie many years later where I've been very tight-lipped about all the things that I learned there because people will roll their eyeballs and think I'm nuts. And I go to this film and I see, you know, this giant head, Andre Gregory, talking about going to Findhorn and putting the stones on the roof of the great hall that was at the end stages of being built. And they put stones on the roof instead of bolting it down because they felt that because it had been built on a vortex, that the roof might fly off. So they got these.
Wow.
I was on the duty of putting the stones on the roof. I was at the top of the ladder. We had to hand up the stone.
Oh my gosh.
And so I had lunch with Andre Gregory and I didn't know who he was. And it was years later, I'm sitting here watching the movie because I keep thinking, he looks so familiar. What have I seen him in? You know, I was in acting school at the time. I'm thinking acting, right? He starts talking about Findhorn and putting the stones on the roof. I went, oh my God, that's how I met him.
That's amazing.
And that Findhorn, kind of, I always say it kind of popped my cork because I was in an immersive situation in a place that was wraparound living in love, in word and deed. And magic was everywhere. And when I mean real magic and the accessibility to this force, this whatever, you know, you couldn't, even the most cynical person couldn't last too long. You know, it just overcame you.
Right, right.
And you went boom and your heart went exploded and then your mind exploded and then everything. So that happened. And then after that, you know, just I kept learning different healing techniques. I went down many rabbit holes in terms of philosophies and religions. I looked at everything because I was looking for the unifying principles and I was looking for how I could take these different pieces and coalesce them into a stained glass window that worked for me.
And then, so there's so many compelling parts of what you're saying. And that was, you were bringing in all the different modalities, learning all the things, and you couldn't, I'm guessing that you weren't going to be able to figure that out, that maybe the universe was going to present it to it in a different way.
Well, I thought I was actually working pretty well along those roads. Always a student, always a seeker, right? And then I really got into sound and I found myself with the possibility to own a family of seven crystal bowls. And then I started having weekly meditations playing the bowls every Monday morning with a gathering of friends where I lived. And I did that for 5 years. And it was in the midst of that when I went to Sound Healer out in Washington State, Tom Kenyon. And my experience with him was basically like a shamanic initiation. There were many people in the room, but for me, it was a turning point. Let's put it that way. And at the very end of that, it was back-to-back weekends of sound healing. And every time we did a practice, I had a question, I had something I was resolving. I was really trying to wipe my whole story clean after a very, very intense year that year, very difficult, ugly year that year. And by the very last practice, I had one last question. And I asked the question before the practice. I went into the practice and the question was answered in a way that was very surprising. Once I received it, I was so grateful for the reframe that it provided, for the release that it provided, for the understanding that in my mind's eye, I'm sitting on the bench, but in my mind's eye, I went prostrate on the floor. I talk about this in the book. And out of me, I didn't think it. Out of me sprang the words, "I am a willing vessel, do with me what you will." Now, those aren't words I would normally say. And it came out, and it came out of this incredible gratitude. And I kind of picked myself up, afterwards. I was emotional and all that, but I was complete and I was empty. You could have called me any name. I say this in the book. I say it all the time because literally you could have called me any name and I would have said, yeah, I don't have my story anymore. It was the most freeing, beautiful, blissful state.
That's beautiful.
And that lasted about 3 days because when you, as we know, nature abhors a vacuum. So when you create one, something's going to come in. So 3 days later, I'm home. My girlfriend, my dear friend, is in my living room, and I'm telling her about my experience. And I'm walking across the living room, and there was the giant wave of water in front of me. And that looked at it and went, "Oh, hello."
I just thought of that when it first appeared to you. Was it more like a drawing, or was it like the actual water? The
It
actual
was.
water.
And I'll say this, I had never had visions before, at least none that I've been aware of. I had had intuitive, psychic, whatever things happened to me in the past. And because I had developed a dowsing practice by then, for about 18 years, that had increased my intuitive abilities. But visions, not so much. And so I always wondered what they looked like. For me, it wasn't like a solid thing that you could touch, but it was definitely huge, definitely blue, definitely cresting, definitely moving. And I don't know, it's almost like a projection from somewhere else, not from your eyeball, but so you're perceiving it in some other way. I don't know how to
That's
describe
great. Yeah, no, it's amazing.
it. But what I also saw was at the bottom of it was like a thing you'd see on a news, scrolling news that's separate from what they're talking about. And it said, this wave represents a push of evolution that is coming to your planet. It is going to be cycling around the planet, anchoring in at the end of 2010. And because this, I'm sorry, 2011, this was November 2010. And if you learn to swim with it or surf it, it will go much better for you than if you resist. So
Pretty
then,
clear.
yeah, right. So then it turns on its side, and now it's this curling letter C of a that you'd expect a surfer to come through. And it said, not in the ticker tape, but yes, in the ticker tape, it said, as the water pulls away from the shore and deepens into the seabed to get its energy to create the crest, which is how the physics works, so should you, meaning me, but it's obviously meant for everybody. To leave your book learning, all your so-called knowledge on the shore and go to the earth and the wisdom keepers of the earth for your knowledge. And then mix it with this incoming push, whatever this wave push was. And then that letter C turned into this figure eight of flowing water in front of my face. Okay, like this. And there was no explanation. And it was about 18 inches high, and it was about anatomy. And it was one of these things. I had perception that it was there. I could walk around, but I kind of had this perception that it was there. And I didn't know what the heck it was. And you know, so after about 3 days, I sat down with my dowsing rods and said, okay, what is this? And what am I supposed to do, if anything? And that's when I was told, you know, it's this loving gift from the universe to help us through the times that are ahead, to help us to remember to stay in flow, in a flow state, that we could call it the infinity wave, that it is comprised of this high quality, you can call it 10th dimensional if you want, a level of love and compassion. And I was supposed to teach workshops about it.
Yeah. How did you feel about it in
I
the
said, no, I don't want to do that, because I, as a student, am always happiest under the wire. I
Sure.
don't pay any attention to me. I'm just in the back of the room learning. I'm okay. And all of a sudden, they're like, no, it's you said you
Done.
were a willing vessel. You said
Yes.
to do with you what you will. So
Wow. Wow, that's
I
really
was like,
cool.
ah.
Yeah. Can't take that back.
Yeah. So I was so uncomfortable. I never saw myself, even though I've been a performer, a producer, a director, a teacher. Like I've been in the front of the room. I've been a leader my whole life, but this was not my comfort zone when it came to spirituality, which was in its container over here. I have to say, because of the time frame when I started learning and all the resistance to this kind of stuff, I had developed two tracks, a track for my regular life and a track for my spiritual life, and they rarely crossed. So what I was being asked to do was completely cross them and marry them. And that's very uncomfortable. That is coming out of a closet of some sort. And at the same time, I didn't feel worthy. I didn't feel like I haven't gotten to the answers yet. How can I teach something? I'm still, you know. So I had no choice but to surrender. I had surrendered at that sound workshop. That's what that do with me what you will was. That was a surrender. And it's not something you can fake or give lip service to. It's a deep vow. It's a soul vow, and it comes when it comes. Anyway, I think probably people could do that in and of if they just decided that's what they wanted to do. But I think it's, I don't want to say what's true for anybody else, but for me, even after decades and decades and decades of exploration and experience, it wasn't an easy thing. And
That's amazing.
it had to come from that place.
So, in a sense, was that infinity wave for you too, and your own healing?
Absolutely. So when I said, well, and I'm kind of, you know, buttoned up person. So like when I teach or when I direct, I'm really well prepared. I have it. I know what my goals are. I have everything lined up. So to be told that then I doubt, I was like, when am I supposed to teach a workshop about something? I don't even know what it is. Well, this is now November, right? Oh, you need to do that starting at the end of January.
So soon.
Like, what? And I doused out the whole thing. It's 3 weekends of 1 weekend a month for 3 months. So that's one workshop. I went, okay. And I'm supposed to charge people money. I'm supposed to pay for the room. I'm supposed to do all this, not knowing one thing.
Oh,
All I
wow.
know is it's a tool for evolution. That's really all I know. And I know there's love and compassion involved. I was not channeling at the time. I didn't actually trust channelers. It's not that there isn't any good information, because I would usually come away with a nugget or two, but because I was super aware of our energy fields and how cluttered they can be and how it can distort information, you know, I knew not to take it hook, line, and sinker. But what happened was because I said, I don't know what I'm teaching, how to have a help. Can I ask somebody to pay me money? I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a very responsible person, and that did not feel responsible. So I sat down with the same friend first week in January, and I had booked the room and I'd done all the things they told me to do. And I sat down with her and I was like, I don't know what to do except sit here with my dowsing rods and maybe something will come through.
Yeah.
And
Okay.
sure enough, it did.
And it's so interesting to me when you're telling the story because you can share with the audience about the dowsing, but that I think that you had been receiving information through dowsing for many years, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yet you had a differentiation in your mind that I don't, I'm not sure I'm asking. I guess that was coming from a different source, or that coming through your mind was something different, or.
The things that were coming through my mind were not as obvious to me
Yeah, it makes
previously.
sense.
They were little whispers, and I hunches, whatever. I didn't know yet how to listen more
Yeah.
carefully.
Okay.
And so I used the dowsing rods as my substitute for that. The rods will tell us what to do, but now and then I'd get this hit to ask a different question or to go this way or that way with the rod, with the questioning series. And it always led us somewhere else. Well, that has grown exponentially since this time, but at that point I was still kind of swimming around how to get these hunches out of my head. So it wasn't super, super clear. So when I started dowsing with my friend that day, all of a sudden, I have this complete change in body rhythm. Slow. I felt like a rock. I felt like a boulder. And then this deep voice came out really slow, and I'm like, my brain is going, what the heck is happening? That's not me. But it was coming out. It was coming out. And I could see these words drop down like through a tunnel. They drop down and then come out. Kind of like, the eight ball where the word would float up, kind of like that. And the word would come and I'd see the word and my mouth would say the word. I was observing. One thing I had gotten used to with dowsing was moving to the side, getting out of the way. That was the way I could try to make my channel as clear as possible so that whoever I was working with, they would get as clear and clean a message as possible. So I had a lot of practice in that. Anyway, so once a week I would get these things. And then I realized I've been following a lot of science and looking where the science and spirituality come together. And then I kind of hodgepodge that together. Meanwhile, I'm looking up online saying, we're used to evolution happening slowly in the background. Then I remembered what I learned at Findhorn was they taught Teilhard de Chardin's theory of evolution. And I pulled that out. And then I pulled out the latest science. And then I'm looking online. I said, it's not happening slowly in the background. It's happening fast now. We need to be conscious of this. Now, today, if you say conscious evolution, it's like, oh, yeah. Back then, I searched the internet for conscious evolution. I found one comment.
It's amazing. Yes, and you said that was Barbara Marx Hubbard,
Yes.
her work. Yes, and that's so fascinating to me, Hope, because I think I started in it was circle work that a dear friend Susan Lucci in town started to do. And it was probably 15 years ago, so about that time. And I committed for years, and she used Barbara Marx Hubbard's work often. And I find it really interesting too, where that's a very pioneering phase for the work that was beginning to come out, even through the teachers like yourself or my friend Susan. And I can see that because if I remember myself at the time, I wasn't on the computer looking things up. I was sitting in the circle learning that way. But she would give us these beautiful handouts and we would walk away from with them and I would just use that. And of course I would, and the funny thing about that time too, she's a dear friend, a few years older, but she would have a stack of nonfiction books. And I would think, I don't, how could she read all those? How could she? And I was still like reading my fiction and getting the Oprah's book club and everything. And like years later, I'm like, oh, now I get it. Now I get it. But it was sort of funny. But it shows how much has changed since that time.
Yes,
So I
it
appreciate what
does.
you're saying.
Yes. Yeah, I
So
had
she,
handouts. Yes,
yeah.
exactly. I wasn't used to using the internet in that way either. And, but I thought, I needed to find out if, because look, we know how the collective consciousness
Yes.
works. If I'm getting infinity signs and I'm getting words like conscious evolution and all of this, then I can't be the only one. So I'm looking to see who else is receiving this.
Yes. Yes.
So Barbara Marx had one mention of conscious evolution, and the infinity was nowhere to be found. And I'm not kidding you. I looked that entire year, 2011. It was not in jewelry. It was not in packaging. It was not in logos, not in logos. And I know that's hard to believe now,
Yes.
but it said we're going to be anchoring in at the end of 2011. So in the first week of January
Yes.
2012, someone handed me a cappuccino with the infinity sign in the corner. And I'm like, here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Yes.
Now it's everywhere and people don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, for someone like you to be, we don't need to go there now, but I'm fascinated to see the witnessing of the unfolding and how that has happened. And it's person by person, and it's still, we're at this beautiful time now where it's still a discovery phase, even though it's everywhere. And I'm sure there's elements of maybe it's a vibration who you go to, but also I think you had said in the book, I'm listening to it on Audible, and you say, in duality, when we see, and I think this is important to, have a little conversation around right now. There's so much chaos. There's a lot of us versus them and black versus white kind of thinking. And then you caught my ear because you said that is good for us because it allows us to have a choice. Can you say a little bit more? I may have gotten that partly wrong, but I think that's what you were saying, that it leads us down the path of being able to make our own choices.
Well, duality is a framework, as I see it, the framework for this 3D experience, along with time and gravity. And the setup is that we have this ability to go back and forth to experience what it's like to have a variety of responses, right? Just it's this, it's that. But it's also a kind of a hemming in because there are actually way more ways to think about something than either or yes or no. So I think what you're referring to is when Creator said, I love humanity because of the way they make choices, because their ability to choose from, he showed me, he, I say he, but you know, the 88 keys of a keyboard. And you can play the low notes, you can play the high notes, you can play a symphony including all of it. You, but humans, and I said, well, doesn't every being have this same opportunity to choose? And Creator said, no, because not every being is on Earth in a 3D reality in that density where the lower notes are available. Those lower notes aren't available in places that have already ascended out of that. Okay.
Yes.
So Creator loves the way humanity figures it out with those 88 keys. And isn't it interesting? There are 88 keys.
Yes. Very much so.
Hit me later. I'm like, wait a minute, 88 keys. Anyway, so there is that aspect of choice. And when we choose to get ourselves up into the higher realms, that's beautiful. You know, that's saying where we are and who we are and what so on. Now, in terms of non-duality, when we apply, for me, the easiest thing is to take the infinity wave and put it into a situation that is stuck in duality, stuck in a struggle conversation, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Which, if you look at the world the way it is, if you look at our political system, if you look at just about any argument that has been going on for thousands of years in some cases, it's that struggle thing back and forth. And there's some must be some benefit for that to be keep happening. I don't know what it is, but I won't comment what I think it is, but we don't have to be in that. When we take the infinity wave, when we take a love and compassion at a very pristine level, and we lower that down onto those two posts of yes or no, We lower the infinity wave down. Now we have this flowing love and compassion. All of a sudden, it lifts the conversation up. Now we're in yes and. Yeah, this is true and that is true. And guess what? I can hold both realities at the same time and maybe a third and maybe a fourth. And let's open it up, because once we don't have to say where we go in terms of dimensions or any of that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I try not to be hung up in all of that. But what I do feel very strongly and have experienced many times, it opens the aperture.
It's everything.
Yeah. And to our guidance system, whatever that is, or there may be many of them, our higher self, our guide team, who knows what else. They'll start bringing in information, because now we're not sitting in that ceiling of 3D. We're exposed to something.
I like the way that you're talking about it too, with the visuals of the first you have this, and then you apply the infinity wave, love and compassion, and it elevates it. I had an example. I was thinking about the infinity wave, and I haven't even gotten to the application part of the book, but I was just envisioning in my, you know, greeting of the infinity wave of what that looked like in front of me, and had a situation this morning that was just, I'd say, like an hour and a half before we were going to record. And I've been practicing compassion for a while, so it kind of goes hand in hand, and I know the power of it. Mm-hmm. But it was beautiful because something occurred that at one point in my life would have gotten me elevated. And I had thoughts of like, you know, I have this interview with Hope at 11 o'clock my time, and this is going to ruin it. This is going to get in my energy field. And then, you know, perhaps, you know, I'd even held that and thought, there was two ways of thinking about it at the moment, which could expand, but it was like, you can go deal with what you want to address after you meet with her, or you can go right now. There's plenty of time and you're prepared for meeting with Hope and all the things. And it was very interesting, because I believe the qualities you're talking about are everything. And I went and sat down and had a conversation that was beautiful. And it just expanded. And let me tell you, the subject matter was, it was political, it was, it had religious tones, and it just opened it up. And so I'm sure it's no mistake that I was listening to your book on recording. You know what I mean? That like, oh, okay. Because I liked, before we recorded, somewhere you said, or in, I don't even know, like, this can be a daily practice. And the more frequently you practice it, the more you'll feel its effects. But it's been dawning on me recently how, and the infinity wave really fits it, like, how can we take that tool and start to use it in our daily lives for ourselves? And it's, and make it easy, right? Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So there's something called the daily wave. I call it the daily wave. And this is what you're talking about.
Okay.
And then there's using the wave as I did in those original workshops, which was for a deep evolutionary leap, basically, to help people move along their spiral of education, not of evolution. Not everybody's ready for that, but that is, so they're, it's differentiating. Okay?
Okay.
The daily wave is so easy, so easy. You just imagine we're using our brilliant imaginations, which were given to us, they're built into our systems as a way to communicate with what's beyond. They are, you look around your room, every single thing is imagined by someone. And we're using it all the time, and we give it validation all the time, except when it comes to this stuff. But why? Why?
True,
why?
Yeah.
Right? I like to say that this is inspiration is also imagination. They are the same things.
Mm-hmm.
So let's imagine, and we know that already from many people's work, but let's just take Dr. Emoto putting a word on a beaker and having the molecules of that water change as a result of the vibration of that word. That's mm-hmm. So our words, our thoughts, everything impacts everything. We know that. So let's take the wave. And let's imagine it when you are stuck in traffic and you're getting frustrated. Your example that you gave just now is another perfect example. You start running the wave. You can run it from anywhere. And remember that there's no wrong way to do it. There's no right way to do it. Just imagine that figure eight of flowing water. It can be turned any direction. It can be any color. It can be any flow state. Like if you're upset, I recommend a spring rushing river in terms of the water. But okay. If you're trying to go to sleep, a little trickling brook is nice. So you imagine it anywhere in your body. I like to navigate usually to my heart center, and I run the wave out, and then I run it to the traffic ahead of me. I run it to the person in front of me. It might be the checkout person. It might be, you know, anybody. It might be my beloved partner. You know, it can be used in times of stress. It could be used in times of beautiful, just touching souls, you know, and improved communication. It will, I think, because we're mostly water, when the water in me and the water in you get connected through this watery, highly vibrational compassion, aren't we going to feel better?
Yes, yes.
And I'm going to do better things.
Yes. Well, you've seen it. You've seen it now.
Oh.
You took the invitation, started 15 years ago, and how it's grown. And then you just wrote the book within the last 5 years. Is that right?
Yeah. 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
It took me, and my guides, you know, they put the foot in my back to do those workshops. And then they put another foot in my back to write the book. And it took me a long time to do it. But I think in a way, the timing was right, because I think by now people are much more willing.
Yes.
You know, I've always been ahead, you know, about 10 years ahead. All of my businesses that I ever started, nobody had heard of them. And then 10
years later, that's great.
Everybody was doing it. So that's just the way it is with me. And now I know that.
And life is fascinating. It is. I think about, you know, when they say, one of my first friends who when I started to hear like some different kind of concepts, and she said the concept that you choose your parents, I'm thinking like, wow, you chose a mother who really opened up channels in you and kind of escorted you through the years. And you, it's just fascinating. The whole trajectory you've been on, and you touched upon, I think that's really important about the water and the consciousness of water. And the things that I know is I've learned, when you think like someone said, the air we breathe or that we speak our words onto is very sensitive, right? And you're talking about like a word being placed on water and then seeing the change in the water. So we hear these different things. And that's why I love bringing them onto the podcast, because I believe as for the listeners and the learners that we hear them in different ways. And then we're like, oh, because there's so many different things to talk about. And I think where I'm coming is like, wow, the power of the air we breathe, the substance we ingest. And, you know, it's remarkable to me too, about when you were given the directive and it said, go to the earth, go to the elements. Was there a part of you that said, okay, I'm ready to put that to the side? And was it to nature you went and to the information coming to you?
I went kind of on a shamanic quest at that point and really dove into, partly because of dowsing, I started traveling and taking groups to places around the world and going myself also independently of groups to work with the sacred places of the earth. Mm-hmm. And I just started trying to open that part of me so that I was indeed going to the wisdom of the earth and the wisdom keepers of the earth. I started to develop this breathing process that was initially shown to me by Tom Kenyon, but then I further developed it. I call it pranic tube breathing. And everything, all my workshops had the elements involved, had the directions involved, just to pull in all the aspects that we could possibly have. We had angels, we had Native American, we had Peruvian. I was, so every year I would douse for where I was supposed to bring a group. And there seemed to be, when I look back, you know, there was a step-by-step process there of layering in the qualities of that land into my being, but also, you know, for other people as well. So that although I took a course or two on shamanism, I really mostly went there myself. I just figured it out, a lot of things out myself. I tend to like to do that. But not to put any courses down, I think courses are wonderful, especially in shamanism.
Yeah.
But I also feel that sometimes we feel, oh, I couldn't possibly do that because
sure.
I'm no, we can all do all the things I do, the things everybody else does. Anybody can go out and take a shamanic stance with nature by just saying, I am you and you are me. And we let us see if we can communicate. You can use your dowsing rods, you can use a pendulum, you could use your own devices, you know, your own internal devices, and start to pay attention, start to see what it's like to get into that rhythm. And I like to demystify things and simplify things and make them accessible.
Yeah, I like that.
That's what we're all here to do. Because I found my own barriers. Oh, I couldn't pause. Like when Yeshua, Jesus, you know, first appeared to me, I was shocked at my reaction. I was absolutely shocked because the unworthiness of crying. How, why are you appearing to me? Like, you know, and he's like, why not?
Couldn't yeah, absolutely.
You know, we have this conversation. Mm-hmm. Like we just hung up the phone yesterday. And I realized these things are so deeply embedded in us.
They are.
Mm-hmm. And he said to me, it's woven into, it's ideas have become real in your fabric that you have to pull.
Yes. Them. Yes.
You have to actively pull them out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this one being unworthy is a very big one in just about every person until they pull it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you see with more consciousness coming in, the offerings, the ability to find teachers, do you think that people's unworthiness to worthiness journeys will collapse in time a little bit, where our, you know, our generation has taken a lifetime? Or do you think parts of that are the human experience, or both?
I think both. I think
yeah.
That it is something for everybody to be aware of, mm-hmm. and to kind of do like a heat-seeking missile on your internal self. You know, notice, be an observation of if that pops up, and then really question it. Is this true?
Yeah.
Is this true? Yep. And then pull it out if it isn't, and then replace it with something else.
Yeah. And I like what you're saying about the grounding of the tools too, because when you say, is it true? I think of the Byron Katie work, and when she had the four questions, and that those don't have to be like, oh, that's out here. You're saying, bring them down. Let's really start questioning and start unraveling and taking it apart. Thank you for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there are, I am so happy at the number of teachers there are. There's somebody for everybody now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I think there is momentum. I think we are growing. I think the events of the last 5 years have sparked a lot of curiosity, willingness to look differently at things. And I feel that we are on a trajectory of evolution that, you know, I just had a channeling with Mary Magdalene, and she was like, just keep going, just make a pledge to keep going. She said, make a vow that even though the path will be rocky, that you will stay the course, because every person who says they'll do that becomes a beacon.
I love
and
it.
That's a beacon for everybody else. And
yes.
Being a beacon has been the since the very first channeling.
Yeah. Yes.
In the thing, you know, all the people who listen to your podcast, everybody is a beacon. And the more we kind of remember that and we vow that we're going to hang into it, the better.
It's a great parting message just for the moment. I know, Hope, your website is spreadinfinitehope.com. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you have some of your workshops and ways to work with you on that. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, it's the same for Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff, YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah. So, come on over.
Yes.
I give Monday night things every Monday night. There's something.
Yeah. And those are on the East Coast time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, on your website. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for being here. It's been such a pleasure, and the hour just flew by. So,
yeah.
Yes, have a great day. Thanks to the listeners for being here, and check Hope's workout. And thank you, Hope. I will be in touch.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mystical Sisterhood. If you love what you heard, please hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. And if it's on Apple or Spotify, I would be so grateful for a 5-star rating and review. And be sure to share with a friend if you're called to do so. To learn more about my 1-on-1 coaching programs and join the Mystical Sisterhood community, visit MaureenSpielman.com or MysticalSisterhood.com.